Lost Horizon by James Hilton. Jeffrey Matthews reads the fifth of 10 episodes.
On his second evening in the Lamasery, Conway overheard a conversation between two Tibetans. He realized then that he and his companions had not arrived at Shangri-La by chance. The mysterious pilot of their aircraft had acted under orders from the High Ones of Shangri-La. Conway was troubled. He had resolved to discover what the plan was. Why four chance passengers in a British aircraft had been brought to these Tibetan solitudes. But one thing he decided instantly. He must tell nobody of the conversation he had chanced to overhear. Neither his companions, who could not help him, nor his hosts, who doubtless would not. And so the four captive visitors settled into a kind of daily routine, and their first week in Shangri-La drew to its end.
"Well, I reckon some folks have to get used to worse places," Barnard remarked.
And that was indeed one of the many lessons to be drawn from their uncalled-for adventure. The Lama, Chang, did his best to entertain them, and with his help the boredom was no more acute than on many a planned holiday. They had all become acclimatized to the atmosphere, finding it quite invigorating, so long as heavy exertion was avoided. They learned that the days were warm and the nights cold, that the Lamasery was almost completely sheltered from winds. Conway was glad to find that the valley below the Lamasery was not out of bounds, although the difficulties of the descent made unescorted visits impossible. In company with Chang, they all spent a whole day inspecting the green valley floor that looked so inviting from the cliff edge. They travelled in bamboo sedan chairs, swinging perilously over precipices, while the bearers in front and behind picked away nonchalantly down the steep track. The valley was nothing less than an enclosed paradise of amazing fertility. Though narrow, it had the luck to catch the sunlight at the hottest part of the day. As for the inhabitants, they were enchanting. They smiled and laughed as they passed the chaired strangers and had a friendly word for Chang. Altogether, Conway thought them one of the pleasantest communities he'd ever seen. Miss Brinklow had been watching for symptoms of pagan degradation and subjected the Buddhist temple they visited to a close scrutiny. "When I get back," she said, "I shall ask my society to send a missionary here, and if they grumble at the expense, I shall just bully them until they agree." "But you yourself would be ideal for the job," said Mallinson. "That is, of course, if you'd like working in a place like this."
"It's hardly a question of liking it, Mr. Mallinson. It's a matter of what one feels one ought to do. Anyhow, I don't see why I shouldn't make a beginning by studying the language. Can you lend me a book about it, Mr. Chang?"
"Most certainly, madam," said Chang. "And if I may say so, I think the idea an excellent one."
When they ascended to Shangri-La that evening, he treated the matter as one of immediate importance. Miss Brinklow was at first a little daunted by the massive volume compiled by an industrious 19th-century German, but she made a good beginning and was soon extracting grim satisfaction from her task. Conway, too, found much to occupy him. During the warm, sunlit days, he made full use of the library and music room. It was tempting to speculate on the method of selection and acquisition of books, and interesting to note that there were none that had been printed during the last decade. Chang, however, told him that the Lamasery had some recently published books, which would doubtless be added to the shelves eventually.
"They arrived at Shangri-La some months ago," he said. "We keep ourselves fairly up to date, you see."
"There are people who would hardly agree with you," said Conway. "Quite a lot of things have happened in the world in the past few years, you know."
"Nothing of importance, my dear sir, that could not have been foreseen 10 years ago, all that will not be better understood 10 years hence.
You're not interested, then, in the latest developments of the world crisis?
I shall be deeply interested in due course.
You know, Chang, I believe I'm beginning to understand you. You're geared differently. That's what it is. Time means less to you than it does to most people. If I were in London, I wouldn't always be eager to see the latest hour-old newspaper. And you at Shangri-La are no more eager to see a year-old one. Both attitudes seem to me quite sensible. Oh, by the way, how long is it since you last had visitors here?
That, Mr. Conway, I'm unfortunately unable to say.
It was the usual ending to a conversation. Conway began to like Chang more and more as their meetings multiplied, though it puzzled him that he met so few of the Lamas. There was, of course, the girl who had played the harpsichord for them, Lo Tsen. He saw her sometimes when he visited the music room, but she knew no English, and Conway was unwilling to disclose his own knowledge of Chinese. Mallinson, who sometimes came to listen to the music for want of anything better to do, found her a very baffling proposition. "I can't think what she's doing here," he said. "This Lama business may be all right for an old fellow like Chang, but what's the attraction in it for a girl? How long has she been here, I wonder?"
"I wonder too," said Conway. "It's one of those things we're not likely to be told. She doesn't appear to dislike being here.
She doesn't appear to have feelings at all, for that matter. She's like a little ivory doll more than a human being. I wonder how old she is.
I wouldn't put her under 13 or over 30.
Closer than that, it would be impossible to go."
"And Chang," said Mallinson, "how old would you say Chang is?"
"Oh, anything between 49 and 149. And so the days drifted by.
Conway became extremely interested in the customs and habits of the valley population and spent many hours discussing them with Chang. Every descent into the fertile paradise confirmed the success of the system of government that had been evolved. The benevolent rule of the Lamasry appeared to need neither soldiers nor police to maintain itself. When Conway raised this point, Chang explained that crime was very rare, partly because everyone had sufficient of everything he could reasonably desire. Conway asked if there were never disputes about women.
"Only very rarely, because it would not be considered good manners to take a woman that another man wanted."
"Or supposing somebody wanted so badly he didn't give a damn whether it was good manners or not."
"Then, my dear sir, it would be good manners on the part of the other man to let him have her, and also on the part of the woman to be equally agreeable. You would really be surprised how the application of a little courtesy all round helps to smooth out these problems."
While Conway and Miss Brinklow pursued their interests and Mallinson fretted, Barnard the American remained remarkably cheerful. "To tell you the truth, Conway," said Mallinson, "Barnard's constant joking is just about getting on my nerves. Isn't it rather lucky for us that he does take things so well? But personally, I think it's damn peculiar. What do you know about him? I mean, who he is and so on."
"Not much more than you do. I understood he came from Persia and was supposed to have been prospecting for oil. It's his way to take things easily. When the air evacuation was arranged, I had quite a job to persuade him to join us at all.
Well, I'm going to see if I can find out anything else about friend Barnard," said Mallinson. "I'll let you know if anything crops up." Some days later, Mallinson made a point of catching Conway alone. "I say, Conway, about Barnard. Did you ever see his passport?"
"Probably. I don't remember. Why?"
"Well, I haven't exactly been minding my own business. Here, read this.
He handed over a cutting from an American paper, and Conway scanned it quickly.
This is about a large-scale financial swindle. What about it?
Now, look at this one. You see, the same story, but something is added. The police are looking for Chalmers Bryant, and look, there's his picture. Remind you of anyone?
Good heavens.
It's Barnard.
Exactly. The man we know as Barnard, travelling presumably on a false passport.
How did you come by these cuttings, Melanson?
Well, Barnard dropped a pocketbook this morning, and Chang picked it up and gave it to me, thinking it was mine. I couldn't help seeing it was stuffed with newspaper cuttings. Some of them fell out as I was handling the thing. And I don't mind admitting, I looked at them. After all, newspaper clippings aren't private, are they? They were all about Bryant and the search for him. I'm afraid there isn't much room for doubt, Conway. One of the men we're cooped up with here is a criminal on the run from the police.
Of course, if you're right, Marinson, said Conway, and the fellow really is Chalmers Bryant, it would account for a good deal of his contentment at being here. He could hardly have found a better place to hide.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
I haven't much of an idea. Probably nothing at all. Saint or crook, we've got to make what we can of each other's company as long as we're here.
I suppose that means your advice to me is to forget what I found out.
Conway shrugged. Although he hadn't taken much interest in the case, he had an impression it would be a fairly bad one of its kind. All he knew was that the failure of the enormous Bryant Group in New York had resulted in losses of about $100 million. In some way or other, Bryant had been monkeying on Wall Street, and the result had been a warrant for his arrest, his escape to Europe, and extradition orders against him in half a dozen countries. As it turned out, Mallinson didn't have to hold his peace for very long. After dinner that evening, when Chang had left them and Miss Brinkler had turned to her grammar book, the three male exiles faced each other over coffee and cigars. It had become increasingly clear during the meal that it lay beyond Mallinson's power to treat the American as if nothing had happened. And it was equally clear that Barnard was aware of it.
"Don't care for me to leave those clippings lying around," he said. And suddenly he threw away his cigar. "Well, okay. So now I guess you all know who I am. So, where do we go from here?"
That was Episode 5 of Lost Horizon by James Hilton. It was read by Jeffrey Matthews.